The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Good to be with you here at the middle part of the week. I guess it's Thursday, so we're coming near to the end of this week. So much to get to as per usual. First off, I'll just mention that the live stream as we carry it on the Trumpet website, that's at thetrumpet.com/live. So, and evidently you can go over there and also see how many are watching at the moment, just like you can with the YouTube live stream. So most of you watching live are probably on YouTube at the moment, but it's good to know, as I stressed the other day, that we've got a backup plan in case there's any trouble down the road with the YouTube channel. We'll be keeping our eye today and tomorrow, I suppose, on Hurricane Laura that's barreling down on the Louisiana coast. I think also a pretty big chunk of Texas. Earlier today, it was at a Category 4. I guess as it's hitting land, that's been downgraded to Category 3. But with the storm surge that they're talking about, this we all know how that turned out with Hurricane Katrina. So we'll certainly, as I say, keep a close watch on that, because that could be devastating. Last night, by the way, in the Trumpet brief, Joel Hilliker, he said that prophetically, momentous events are overtaking one another. And, you know, what was really stunning about, he's basically summarizing what's coming out in the next Trumpet magazine. And the first big story was that massive explosion at the early part of this month. That goes back to the beginning of August, I guess. That massive explosion in Lebanon, and how that just sent shockwaves around the world, and even prophetically, as we noted on this program and at thetrumpet.com, and of course now in the Trumpet magazine that's coming out. And yet think about how long ago that seems. It's like it happened a couple years ago almost. It's just been buried. This massive, almost mini nuclear bomb type blast right in the heart of Beirut. And we've already moved on to quite a number of other stories. He said, Mr. Hilliker did in the Trumpet brief, it's stunning how rapidly this was buried by other events. That's where we are. Prophetically momentous events. One just overtaking another. Of course, in the United States, with the rioting and the burning and the looting, you have this this sort of slow motion transformation that's taking the United States from the richest, most powerful nation in the history of the world. And here we are being transformed into a third world nation. Here we are in the midst of a transformation that many on the radical left have been calling for years. And now they're carrying out the plan, city to city. Even as many of our leaders, our commentators, celebrities, professional athletes continue to whitewash all of this mindless and vicious violence, they just want to whitewash it away, tell you it's not really happening, tell you it's not as bad as it looks. Mostly peaceful. We'll remember that phrase for a while. Look at these scenes from Minneapolis again. This is last night, clip one. Looting this Target store, this department store, smashing up the cash registers. Another department store ransacked and smashed. No sign of police. But here are the Black Lives Matter rioters. And what prompted this round of robbery and destruction? What did they use this time around as a pretext to that kind of mayhem? Well, like with previous incidents, they sent the word out on social media that the police shot a black man. And so then they started to riot. The Minneapolis Police Department, by the way, tweeted out as quickly as possible, "This evening, a murder suspect committed suicide as police approached him. No officer weapons were fired." But it was too late. It was too late. The mob was already in motion. A murder suspect took a gun and killed himself. Don't go looking for the footage. It's gruesome. But here are the police surrounding this man, keeled over after he shot himself. And then the passersby, they immediately start yelling at the police. "You killed that man. You shot that man." This was a murder suspect. A murder suspect who committed suicide. And immediately, these black Americans that were passing by, they immediately rushed to judgment, not knowing the facts, assuming that the police shot him. And then they're off and running on another riot. Another round of, as if Minneapolis hasn't had enough of this, another store smashed up, another store ransacked, another store with rampant thievery, violence, burning. We've seen it all through the summer. The Kenosha County Sheriff, by the way, he had a few words to say yesterday about social media and the people reacting to these calls for rioting. This is clip two.
And I go back to social media. One of the invitations looked like a party invitation, something you would get from your brother to come and see your niece's graduation or her birthday. Come, wear your black outfits, wear black masks, bring your backpacks filled with Molotov cocktails, rocks, and whatever else they may have in those backpacks.
Yeah, it's like a big party invitation. Come along, join us on the street, bring your weapons. Should be fun. And, you know, people are coming from miles away. Some of the few that are getting arrested are coming from hours away to get in on the fun. All it takes, just one little rumor, doesn't even have to be true. Just send it out and it'll spread on social media. Social media is really helping us, isn't it? It's helping with this scourge, this epidemic of violence. And when it's so easy to be set off, here's where we got to keep in mind the big picture. Is it ever going to subside, the anger, the resentment, the mistrust, the distrust, the hatred, the division? We wrote this in the August Trumpet just a couple months ago, surrendering to lawlessness. It says, on top of that, no matter how many of these policies are enacted, what the Black Lives Matter movement is demanding, and as we said here, no matter how many of these policies are enacted, their advocates will never absolve and forgive America for the sin of racism. Having become convinced this nation is institutionally, systematically racist, they will always be able to unearth evidence that in their minds proves this beyond doubt. Never will America or any nation on earth meet the illusory standard of racial and social justice these radicals harbor in their minds. Even if the nation progressed, we have in quotes, even if the nation progressed to the point of enforced equality on all educational, financial, and occupational outcomes for all races, it would only take, listen to this, it would only take one person in a bustling, messy nation of 330 million to do something heinous to a black man, and the fury would erupt just as violently as it is now, and worse. See, it keeps happening. 400 years of this. We can't breathe. All it takes is one incident, just one person, And suddenly everybody's guilty. Everybody's reminded of the fact that, we've had this institutionally for four centuries. Charles Barkley, the commentator, the sports commentator, I saw him on CNN, and he was talking about just how exhausting it is to be a black commentator, because everywhere he goes, he has to comment on the social injustices of our time. And then he listed off all of the names from, incidents that have happened just in the last few months, just in the last year or two, and there's been no justice, he says. So anyway, his point is that it's just happening all the time. It's happening. It doesn't matter if the facts say that the police shot 28 unarmed black people last year. This is genocide, and there is no changing that mindset. This much we've learned from this past summer. In their minds, it's genocide, and they're exhausted. That the NBA can't even continue with its season in the bubble because it's too much. And so they're contemplating whether to just call off the season entirely. And Barack Obama, by the way, he tweeted out how brave this is of these NBA players. I wonder, I think it would be really brave if they were to go without their salaries. I wonder if that happens. To not do your job and yet still make millions, that's a pretty good deal. There's quite a few Americans that are losing their jobs, that are actually losing their jobs, which means for them, they lose their pay. In any event, the former president, Barack Obama, he says, I commend the players on the Bucks for standing up for what they believe in. Coaches like Doc Rivers and the NBA and the WNBA for setting an example. It's going to take all our institutions to stand up for our values. All of these institutions, this is bravery today. Shut it down. We're certainly well practiced at that, shutting things down, right? There's probably plenty of people out there that didn't even know the NBA was playing right now. And there's Doc Rivers the other day shedding a tear for Jacob Blake, the one who was wanted for a sex crime, the one who's brandished weapons before in front of the police, the one who's resisted arrest, including the one recently. And as I understand it, I think Doc Rivers is from Chicago. How many tears has he shed over the years? For the violence, for the bloodshed, for the babies that have just been in their cribs and got shot by a bullet, a stray bullet from a drive-by shooting. That happens in Chicago all the time. Mr. Blake, if he would have yielded, as Lindsey Graham said the other day, if he just would have yielded, he wouldn't have been shot. But he's the hero now. He's the martyr. He's the latest in a long line. It's exhausting. It's happening so often. It's like we said in the Trumpet article. In a nation, a bustling, messy nation of the United States, 330 million people, all it takes is one heinous act. And it confirms every one of those suspicions. Charles Barkley's colleague, by the way, Kenny Smith, he, in solidarity with his friends in the NBA, he gets up and walks off the set yesterday on live TV. So the protesting is, well, it's everywhere. They're in step with what they see as peaceful protesters out on the streets. There was an incident in the NBA recently, by the way, this black player that mouthed this racial slur toward a white player, and there was no penalty or anything handed down, as I understand it, from the NBA. And so Barkley and Kenny Smith and Shaquille O'Neal, they're all talking about this racial slur uttered by a black man toward a white man. And then this is what Kenny Smith said about the comment, clip 8.
But it's not racism because it has no power. Racism, you have to have power, which means if I do something to you, I have power over you for you can't do anything else.
So that's national TV. The United States has 44 million blacks, I believe. And this narrative, and it's out there, and it's being preached. You just heard it. For the 44 million, as long as you maintain a minority status, you are incapable of any act of racism. On the other hand, for whites, it's systematic. It's institutional. It's in the DNA. When it's in the DNA, it's you're guilty if you're white. No matter what you do or say, you're just guilty. Guilty on account of your whiteness. This is the kind of rhetoric that leads to race war. And the thing of it is, we're seeing the seeds of it in Kenosha right now. The race war has started. The race war has begun. There's other factors too. It's a class war in many ways. It's a war between Marxism and capitalism. In Kenosha, it seems like it's now that there's more National Guard in there. Thankfully, it's died down some after three nights of carnage. And the protesters there, they're shifting gears like they did in Portland and Seattle. Now some of them are driving through streets of suburban neighborhoods, honking their horns, screaming at ordinary citizens trying to get sleep at night, accusing them of racism. And then, of course, you have the shooting that was just happening a few hours before yesterday's program. All that carnage, all of that bloodshed, blood touching blood. This 17-year-old who came from, I think, 15 miles outside of Kenosha, strapped with a rifle. He told someone that interviewed him that he was there to help keep the peace. He was there to take matters into his own hands. If the police weren't going to do their job or show up in some cases, then he would. The American Spectator. There's a piece about the seeds of civil war. It talks about how that the protesters have been calling for a revolution. They want this. And the article refers to one of the protesters in particular, this one that was killed in Austin. I don't remember the incident or how far back that was. But he was calling for revolution, and others have as well, even ones in the fine suits, the talking heads. The Spectator says, too many Americans, particularly among the participants in the make-believe revolution, haven't learned a real lesson yet, which is that people get killed in a revolution. See, when you have a revolution, and we have this in our own history, remember, the revolution, the Civil War wasn't so much a revolution, I guess you could view it that way. The South revolting against the government, rebelling against the government. But when you have that sort of thing, people die by the thousands. It says, point a gun at a driver of a car. You're blocking in on a city street after footage of drivers being pulled out of cars and beaten in similar circumstances is everywhere on the internet, and you will be one of the lives claimed in that revolution. It's going to be, in other words, it's going to be every man for himself. And so that's what we saw in Kenosha the other night. Here comes this 17-year-old, Kyle Rittenhouse. He shows up to, in his mind, keep the peace. And the mob started attacking him. The mob started chasing him. The main networks, of course, are not going to give you the details of this. They're going to try to just make it, again, us versus them. Anything to make President Trump look bad. But here goes the mob. What kind of crazed, deranged mindset must you have
to chase after a man with a rifle and to try to smash him in the head with your skateboard or to throw some kind of a firebomb at him from behind. Well, he turns around and he shoots the first guy. He dies. Then he takes off and the mob is chasing after him again, wanting to smash his head, wanting to kill him. And then he, again, shoots, and another one dies. Another one pulls out a gun, a handgun. His arm is badly injured, again, after taking gunfire. But it says here, Kyle Rittenhouse is from The Spectator. Kyle Rittenhouse, or someone like him, was utterly and completely inevitable, and the People's Revolution Movement and other Antifa BLM covens bear total responsibility for his appearance. You see, with no police, like Tucker Carlson said last night, should we really be shocked by this? Particularly when you move out of these big cities and into suburbs where there's going to be more weapons, where you're going to attract more rural help coming in. Help, I say, in the form of these vigilante movements that are going to take matters into their own hands. This is what we've been telling you. This is what we've been preparing you for. It's not about which side is right. It's about everybody getting hurt. It's about people dying. It's about civil war. It says, what did you morons think was going to happen? That you could continue burning down a small city in middle America without any resistance? People are going to defend their lives and property sooner or later. You may have caught a break in that your nemesis turned out to be a 17-year-old you could cancel as a crazed would-be school shooter, but the next incident might very well run your people up against decorated Navy SEALs or Marines or retired cops with unblemished service records, or just plain pillars of the community well-versed in firearms, particularly in a place like Wisconsin, where those with hunting licenses represent a fighting force as large as the army of many a small nation. You see where this is headed? This is not the trumpet. This is the American Spectator. It says the citizenry will eventually fight back. And when it does, nobody ought to be surprised. The make-believe revolution must at some point become real. In Kenosha, it became real. And in real revolutions, people get killed because more than one side is fighting. See, they want a revolution. They want to fight. They don't even really know what they're getting into. That's what this article is saying at the start. But you better think about what you're wanting, what you're agitating for. You should think about what you're stirring up, the consequences of inciting hatred. It says here, but while Antifa and Black Lives Matter have lit the match to this powder keg, perhaps the real culprits are the men standing by with buckets of water but refusing to use them to douse the fuse. And for that, Wisconsin's Democrat Governor Tony Evers is far more at fault for the Kenosha bloodshed than is Kyle Rittenhouse. It says that kind of atrocious leadership is by no means limited to Wisconsin. It is what has ignited the make-believe revolutionaries all over the country and turned city after city into burned-out ghost towns. Half of Kenosha has gone up in flames. Half of the downtown area of Kenosha is just destroyed, utterly destroyed. It's what's surprising is that there aren't even more Kyle Rittenhouses. Not in any way are we calling for that or encouraging that. Human nature being what it is. When you see your livelihood, when you see your property, when you see your business going up in flames. It's like that clip I played for you on the program that got canceled, by the way. The individual that had some pretty sobering warnings to give to that city council. Look. We're only going to be able to stand so much of this. We're only going to be able to put up with so much pain and suffering before we take matters into our own hands. And that's what we're seeing on the streets. And it's on both sides. And we got a good glimpse of it in Kenosha. It says here, I think a lot of the Antifa Black Lives Matter mob might be deluded into thinking their make-believe revolution could be real without any real cost to them and their friends, and making it a real revolution has been and is their goal. It says, I think the genie is out of the bottle. And again, I want you to think about this in relation to some of the things you have read at thetrumpet.com going back all the way to the beginning. Going back all the way to when those first magazines were coming out in the early 1990s, and then the website came along at the end of the 1990s. For 30 years, the genie's out of the bottle, it says. I think Kenosha showed us a glimpse of it, and I think unless the political class in states like Wisconsin, Oregon, Washington, New York, Minnesota, and elsewhere finally wakes up, the sad fact is, it could well require thousands or even millions of Kyle Rittenhouses to put out the fires raging along Lake Michigan and elsewhere. It says, and that's an even larger problem than what happens on November 3rd for both sides. Here we're looking at a much, much bigger problem than a presidential election in the United States. And yet you listen to the talking heads, you listen to the commentators, and it's as if everything in America's future or in America's demise is hinging on what happens November 3rd. We don't usually play clips from the comedian class, but here's Stephen Colbert. It's hard to say it's even comedy. There's no live audience or anything, and well, there's nothing funny about this next statement, but listen to what he says about the president, clip 3.
That is why voting in November is so important. Because Donald Trump does not care if you live or die of COVID or of racism, as long as he wins.
He just doesn't care if you live or die. That's the comedian, MSNBC, had a commentator on last night, who said this, clip 4.
That the thing that worries me about this election, just from a macro level, what's on the ballot ultimately is American democracy or white supremacy.
You choose. Choose Democrats. If you vote Democrat, you're voting for democracy. If you vote Republican, you're voting for white supremacy. See, that's, well, you say that's just some deranged commentator, but that's Nancy Pelosi the other night. We've got an imposter in the White House. We've got an enemy of the state in the White House, and all of the Republicans, they're right on board with him. Doc Rivers said that the other night when he shed a tear for Jacob Blake. He said the Republicans are the problem. He lashed out at what was said at the Republican convention. How dare you get up and say that this is dangerous? It's dangerous for us, he said. How dare you, you Republicans, talk about you're fearing danger and anarchy? You see it, it's us versus them. He said for the longest time, we, and by that I guess he means the black community, or Democrats, it was hard to tell the difference, but he said, for the longest time, we have loved America, but you haven't loved us in return. So how does that get fixed? How do you build a bridge between the two sides? All it takes, like we said in the August issue of The Trumpet, all it takes is one heinous act in a bustling, messy nation of 330 million people. You've got all the phones, you've got all the video, you've got the social media, you've got everything to just fan those flames until entire cities burn to the ground. Well, someone's, for all of this nonsense that we hear routinely within the chattering class, someone is circulating a memo to some of these Democrats and to some of the talking heads in the Democratic media complex that this may not, speaking of November 3rd, this violence, this carnage, this looting, this smashing and burning, this actually may not help us. It may not help the Democrats win. Keep in mind, last week at the Democratic National Convention, not one single speaker, not one of them got up and demonstrated the moral courage to denounce the rioting and the bloodshed, to denounce the violence, the thievery, ransacking these buildings, burning businesses to the ground. Listen to this comment from CNN's Don Lemon just the other night, clip 5.
The rioting has to stop. Chris, as you know and I know, it's showing up in the polling. Mm-hmm. It's showing up in focus groups.
So now it has to stop. Okay. Because why? Because it's evil? Because it's destructive? Because it's murderous? No, because it's showing up in the polling. So we better tamp it down. This is quite a different message for Don Lemon, because back in the days that followed George Floyd and Minneapolis going up in flames during the first wave of violence, here's what Don Lemon had to say, clip 9.
I understand the anger. I don't understand the actions. I'm not going to judge people, because when you don't have an outlet, when you don't have a platform, when you're upset and when you're angered, people lash out in ways that you or I may not understand. So I will give them the benefit of the doubt.
He gave the rioters the benefit of the doubt back then and said that he understood the anger. His colleague, Chris Cuomo, he said not long after that one you just heard, he said this, clip 10.
Now, too many see the protest as the problem. No, the problem is what forced your fellow citizens to take to the streets. Persistent and poisonous inequities and injustice. And please, show me where it says that protests are supposed to be polite and peaceful.
Well, that's in the Constitution, but leave that aside. That's what they were saying at the end of May and early June. But now you see, the other night, as these two were talking, Don Lemon says the rioting has to stop because Chris, you know it's showing up in the polls. And he was nodding, oh yes, this is not good for us politically. The lights are finally going off. And so, as you would expect, here comes Joe Biden yesterday after not saying a word about any of this, what's happening to America, what's happening to our cities. He comes out with a statement yesterday, and it's certainly not the strongest denunciation ever, but at least he said something. Here's clip 6.
Protesting brutality is a right and absolutely necessary. But burning down communities is not protest. It's needless violence. Violence that endangers lives. Violence that guts businesses and shutters businesses that serve the community. That's wrong.
So at least he said that, and you have to give him some credit for that. But this is not helping. This is not helping to solve the problem. Neither side, as we've noted at the Trumpet, is going to be able to solve this. The division, the hatred, the anger. It runs so deep, but you can see why they're pivoting some, because the polling, as Don Lemon said, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good for the Democrats. PJ Media says a new Zogby poll on presidential approval gives Donald Trump the highest marks of his presidency and surprisingly solid numbers with blacks and Democrats. So there's blacks and Democrats now that have a more favorable view of Donald Trump. So the Marxists, they may have overplayed their hand here. It may turn out, and we've made this point before, you've got to convince 70 million Americans with a platform of lockdown, no school, cancel the sports, burn the cities, vote for us in November. It says here, very few polls have been released since the Democratic National Convention. Those that have been made public show Trump making a strong rebound in several battleground states. This is not good news for the Democrats either. He's gaining ground in the battleground states, and now an uptick in his approval ratings. Perhaps the most important factor in the approval numbers is Trump's surprising strength with black voters and Democrats. Think about 2 Kings 14, God intervening to save Manasseh, to save Israel, but just temporarily. Step back, look at the bigger picture, look at what the trumpet has been saying for years and years. You talk about a prophecy, or prophecies, plural, that you just don't want to see come to pass. Because it has to do with the death of your own nation. Following the rioting and the burning after the Rodney King affair in 1992, this is what we had in the June 1992 trumpet. My father said, as the economy grows worse, the rioters are going to burn more and more because God's wrath is upon us. This is 28 years ago. And God is far more wrathful toward the white people in Israel than he is with the black people, I should say. The problems are going to intensify until our people repent. He's talking about the sins of the people, the sins of the leadership, the sickness in Israel, head to toe. And he goes through that word pestilence in Ezekiel 4. And then a few years later, you had the O.J. Simpson trial and verdict and all of the division that that caused between the races. Here's what we said in September of 1995. My father said, ultimately, the damage from this trial will be far worse than the Rodney King affair. It says some have called this, well, it talks more about the trial there, but it says At a time when crime is out of control, our police departments are being stripped of their power. They're being stripped of their power. Here's a quote from March of 2012. The article, again, by my father, U.S. Attorney General ignited the race bomb. It says, Republican racism has become the battle cry of the radical left, led by the president. This is, of course, Obama at the time, and his attorney general, that would be Eric Holder. It says mostly that charge is untrue. Of course, it's possible with some. It's like we said just 2 months ago. All it takes is one person, one heinous act, and it confirms everything everyone's been told to believe. April 2015. Cities burned with fire. This is in actually the July issue, 2015. It says, accusations of police racism are heightening public mistrust of law enforcement and fueling a trend of violent race-related incidents and lawlessness. Anger among certain high-profile segments of the black population in particular is growing and is boiling over in rioting and violence with increasing frequency in American cities. Then we had an article the following year, The Real Agenda Behind Black Lives Matter. What is it about this organization? Go back to the beginning of it. Pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon. They want to bring down the system. They want to defund the police. And that's what we're seeing in all of these images. The rioters, they move right into a department store in Minneapolis. And what do you see? Total mayhem. And what don't you see? Law enforcement. And while the talking heads argue this week over this 17-year-old in Kenosha and over Jacob Blake and which side is right, which side is wrong, in all of those scenes from the other night, the shooting, the running, the smashing, the burning, what don't you see? You don't see the police. You don't see law enforcement. This is what it looks like when you defund the police. This is what it looks like when you handcuff the police. We're getting a good glimpse of it. And we've written about it over and over again. 2016, the September issue, America faces an explosion of racial violence. We're facing an explosion of this. He said at that time, "I believe the radical left will do almost anything to cling to power in this coming election. Are they stirring up race problems in order to present themselves as the solution and to justify grabbing more control?" That's what my father wrote ahead of the 2016 election. If only he knew, what at that time, I mean, if only he knew what the radical left was doing behind the scenes to try to destroy their opponent. But his point back then is, look, are they trying to stir up race problems in order to present themselves as the solution? If you listen to the rest of that clip from Don Lemon, he says it's not good in the polling. So, and basically he was talking to Joe Biden. He was giving some advice to the Biden camp, saying that look, all of this violence, it's happening on President Trump's watch. So you've got that in your favor, but you've got to come out and denounce it. You've got to come out and say this has got to stop. And I'm the one to stop it. Me and my partner, Kamala Harris, we're going to save America's cities. Well, you can look through thetrumpet.com for any of these articles that I've rattled off here in rapid succession. This is a subject that we know a little bit of something about because of what it says in Isaiah 1 and verse 7, because of what it says in Ezekiel 4. And Ezekiel 5. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England. This is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
In 1 John 2 and verse 15, God tells us to love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. It says, if any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. You can't have it both ways. You can't love both. You can't love the Father and then love this world, this present evil world, Galatians 1:4. The god of this world is Satan the devil. 2 Corinthians 4:4. It says in verse 16 here in 1 John 2, for all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. John talks about the pride of life. That's the way of this world. All of us just filled with pride and vanity, arrogance. That's the way the god of this world is. Your Bible says that he exalts himself above the true God. He puts himself above his creator. Ezekiel 28 says that his heart Lucifer's heart was lifted up. It was lifted up. There's a verse in Psalm 73 that says, therefore, pride compasses them about as a chain. Violence covers them as a garment. That's a pretty apt description of our society today. Filled with pride and covered in violence. Wearing it like a garment. And then the leaders, to their shame, inciting hatred and violence, inciting division, inciting the riots. In the Wonderful World Tomorrow booklet, Herbert Armstrong says, today, as in ancient times, too many of those who seek offices of power over the people of cities, states, districts, or nations, promise great benefits, pose as public benefactors, while their inner motives are ambitions for personal power and wealth. They pose. They pretend. Kristi Noem, she's the governor of South Dakota. I guess she spoke last night at the convention and talked about our cities and what's wrong with our cities and how that they're turning to anarchy. How that the violence is spreading and that people are moving out. They want to get out of Portland. They want to get out of Chicago. They want to get out of New York or Seattle. And then over at MSNBC last night, they brought on the mayor of Seattle, Mayor Jenny Durkin. And so she's there defending her city. But listen to the way after all that's happened this summer, listen to the way she describes Seattle, clip 7.
Seattle is a city that I raised my two children in, and I would not have raised them anywhere else. They're fine young men, as are their friends. We have our violent crime is down 5% this year. We have people are not leaving Seattle. In fact, again, our housing prices continue to increase, and the people moving here are young families.
Just a total whitewash of what's actually happening on the streets. Everything's great. What did Mr. Armstrong say? They pose as public benefactors, while their inner motives are ambitions for personal power and wealth. You would think, when you start seeing people shooting up the city and burning down the businesses, you would think, of all people, the governor of Wisconsin would set aside a political agenda and just do what's best to save businesses, to prevent what happened the other night with those shootings. But no, he said, well, we'll send in a few National Guard, but not that many. We don't want to take all that the President Trump is offering. I mean, it's President Trump. He wants people to die, right? He wants to kill you, whether it's COVID or racism. He wants to kill you. That's going out over the airwaves every night. Pride and vanity, the pride of life. That's how John describes the way of this world. Isaiah 13 and verse 11, it says, and I will punish the world for their evil and the wicked for their iniquity, and I will cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease and will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. All of this destruction is coming upon our nations because God wants to humble us. He wants to bring the haughtiness down low. He wants to cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease. He just wants us to humbly turn our hearts to Him for the answers, for the solutions to our many problems. He wants for us to acknowledge our sins, to come down off of our high horse and to say, God, we don't know. We don't have the solutions. We've tried everything, and we've only made matters worse. We've seen the hatred between the races just get worse and worse and worse, even though this is the most blessed nation in the history of the world in terms of prosperity. Certainly, But power and might, opportunity, freedom. And look at where we are. Look at what we're doing to ourselves. I read you that passage in Isaiah 2 last week about the loftiness of man. We talked about how that this really helps to give important context to Isaiah 3 and the curse of no leadership, a total lack of leadership in the last days in the nations of Israel. And what does it get back to? Well, the lofty looks of man, the haughtiness of men. God has to bring that down low so that he can then begin to work with us, so that he can then begin to teach us, so that he can begin to teach us about his law of love, about his law of unselfish, outflowing concern for the good and welfare of others, to teach us the way of give, the way of service, of sharing, of kindness and generosity, of meekness, gentleness. We don't see a lot of that on the streets of America today. We don't see any of that. It's leading to our destruction. Die by suicide, said Lincoln. He said back in the 1830s, Abraham Lincoln, he said it almost two centuries ago, that the greatest threat to America's existence, it comes from within. This is a man who didn't understand everything about God's purpose, but he read and studied the Bible, and he had a certain amount of human faith, at least, in God. Got down on his knees and prayed for God to deliver the nation. At that moment of real crisis in the Civil War, leading up to Gettysburg, saved America, at least for a while, at least temporarily. And then he was brought down right after the end of that war by an assassin's bullet. Someone that was still convinced that his side was right, and that the best way to solve this problem, this dispute, was to kill the president. Take him out. And so he did. Isaiah 2 and verse 22 says, "Cease you from man, whose breath is in his nostrils, for wherein is he to be accounted of?" Here is explained or expressed the source of all of our problems today. Cease you from man, it says, whose breath is in his nostrils. We're just human beings. All of us just live for a short time and then we die. We have only so much time on this earth to just make the most of our physical existence, to look to God, to turn to God. Where is that message in all of the violence and carnage of this past summer? Where is that message? Is religion helping America? We're supposedly in the midst of somewhat of a revival, because they sure like the current occupant of the White House, but are the problems of the nation truly being solved? God says the problem is with the lofty looks of man. The problem is the haughtiness. Jeremiah 17 and verse 5, it says, "Cursed be the man that trusts in man and makes flesh his arm, and whose heart departs from the eternal." We come under a curse if we put our faith and trust in a human being. If there's one thing that human beings have demonstrated over the course of 6,000 years of human civilization, it's that we are utterly incapable of solving our problems. We are quite capable, on the other hand, of racism and hatred. Yes, from the majority and the minority. We're quite capable of that. But we are utterly incapable of solving the problems that we see piling high on top of our nation. Psalm 146:3 says, "Put not your trust in princes, nor in the son of man in whom there is no help." This is the lesson that man refuses to learn. Even with all of these problems everywhere around us, you still have both sides convinced that saving America is dependent on not God's intervention, but on what happens on November 3rd. What we need is God and His miraculous intervention. What we need is God and His Spirit of love. What we need is the kingdom of God, God's family. We need that established on this earth today, and it will be, and it will be soon. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.